Welcome to CS Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 90 of CS Radio, our first live show and our last show of season four. I'm J. Michael DeAngelis.
And I'm Amy Len Kirshner.
And I'm N. Thomas Leach.
Thank you for being our guest today. Natty has been a big supporter of us doing a live show. And so this is our first experiment. We're going to be trying this out on Instagram. So what we're going to do is we're going to record the show as we normally would, but we'll be monitoring Instagram for questions. So if you have any questions about the topic we're going to discuss or just some general career-related questions, we'll do our best to answer them. So thank you for watching and enjoy the show.
Can we wave at Barb Hewitt?
Let's wave at Barb Hewitt. Great. So, Milin, you've brought a topic for us to discuss today.
So I was saying yesterday that the Times helped us out. The New York Times sent me an alert yesterday about this article, Why Find Your Passion is Such Terrible Advice. And this is a thing we come across often. I think Natty and I, especially as college advisors, when students are thinking about picking a major, there's a lot of pressure on it. It's the phenomenon of picking the thing that will determine the things that then make up my life, which can feel certainly overwhelming. And you hear those quotes, I feel like you see them on Instagram, on Pinterest, the Steve Jobs, if you find your passion, you never work a day in your life. And that adds a ton of pressure to the internship search, to the major decision, to everything. So this article I thought was really interesting. We will obviously link it in the show notes. But I liked that the Times article took an angle on it that said, this is bad advice, not just because of the pressure that it puts on and the fact that work is often work, but it's also that people don't necessarily find the thing. They work really hard at the thing first, and that could entail coming across some failure, which is, of course, a hot topic here at Penn as well.
So when I first read this article, I was reminded of our former director, Pat Rose, often talked about this, and she wrote a great blog article a couple of years ago, which I will link in the show notes when we release this, in which she paraphrased a Stephen Sondheim lyric, which is, do what you love, or do you love what you do? And she came down very hard on love what you do, because that will then enable you to do what you love. And I think that's true. And I think for me, that's very true. I have spoken many times about I have very strong professional interests outside of career services, but I love the work that I do in career services, and I love the people that I'm with, and that gives me the stability, but also the drive to continue my pursuits outside of career services as far as my writing and acting goes, because there's a real correlation there, because I'm so happy and fulfilled in my 9-to-5 work that I have the energy and drive to do what I want to do outside of the office.
Does that mean you have to feel like you're forcing it, though? Like, does that mean no matter what you are, that you have to force that you really love it?
Well, no, I don't think you can force it. I think you have to try and find something that you do like to do. I have not loved every job that I have had, for sure. And when I look back on those periods, it was much harder to do the things that I wanted to do. Much harder.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have the energy and I didn't have the support at those places to do it either.
And sometimes it's just practical as well. I actually really loved the work that I did when I was planning weddings and corporate incentive trips at the various hotel jobs that I had. I really liked the work. I loved being engaged with clients. The details of the actual events I enjoyed. I liked executing the events. I found it took up all of my time. So I didn't have anything left to either give back to charity or to, I wasn't making quite enough money to just be able to be a philanthropist, but it took up so many hours, including weekend hours, that I found that other things were falling, including being able to just commit to family events or certain other things that I couldn't, like someone's christening or birthday party, I couldn't guarantee that I'd be there because the work was taking up so much. So sometimes that can be the case too. Like it can be finding a balance of the thing that you like, incorporating it into other work maybe, but making sure that you're checking in with all of the facets of your life, because work is a major part of it, but it's not the only part of it.
Would it be fair then to say, like, maybe find what you love about what you do? Because there's probably like, a million
Absolutely.
Different things about what you do.
Absolutely.
But maybe a certain few of those are what you truly love. And those end up being the things maybe that you're the best at because you put the most passion into them.
Say maybe a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe you didn't necessarily just find that, but through going through things slowly, or just you didn't just appear upon and know that this was your passion necessarily.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really interesting point about this Times article, is that you might discover at the first try at it that you really aren't good at it, but you like it for certain reasons. You find it fulfilling for a reason, or you want to get better at it, so you have to push the needle on it, and you have to really find new ways to get exposure to it. You could, again, this kind of fall flat on your face a couple times. Think of this maybe in a computer science example of like making some code that really doesn't work, but being able to go back. And if you're liking the iterations and the process of it, that's okay. But if you're finding that you're getting frustrated and you're really loathing it, maybe this is not the, you know what I mean?
I'm forgetting what it was actually, but I saw something and I really enjoyed the character was a computer programmer and said what she liked the best was like the failing and figuring out, going back and
fixing
it.
Was it in Russian Doll?
It was Russian Doll.
It was Russian Doll. Getting in our Netflix examples, which, you know, now I have time for.
That's right.
In career
That's right.
services, I have time to actually watch shows, which I definitely did not have time for when I was working in hotels.
So, Milan and Natty, you both counsel students much more than I do. So how would you approach talking about this with a student, particularly one who came in and maybe said, I don't even know what my passion is?
Luckily, Penn is incredibly interdisciplinary. So I think that this is a low risk place to explore. Making sure that you're checking in with your advisor to make sure that you're kind of completing requirements for graduation, but genuinely looking at course descriptions, getting advice from friends about courses that they liked, professors that they really enjoyed, and seeing what things align. I think it's just a matter of asking smart questions often, like, what are you hoping to get? What are things that you hope to develop, even if you don't know what you need to develop? Like, friends, peers, advisors can help with that.
And really often, I mean, surprisingly, you have that conversation all the time, no matter what level. I mean, I think a lot of times people assume, oh, freshmen are having this conversation. But no, we have this conversation with seniors a lot of times,
too. Alumni.
Or alumni. And it's not uncommon for them to then think, I don't know what I'm passionate about, and then I feel like I've done nothing towards even what I might, like, what things I might be interested in. I haven't done anything that'll lead me there. And a lot of times in the conversation is, well, what have you done? Talk about the things that you've done. And almost every single time, people then pick out, oh, well, I was a part of this student organization, or in my free time, I love to do this. And then you can kind of cascade that and say, well, what about that was so engaging to you? Was it that the interaction with other people? Was it the project management side of it? And a lot of times you can build out upon that.
Again, it all correlates, but when you're thinking about composing a resume, so often you have students distinguishing between the things that are professional and the things that are extracurricular or the things that are club or volunteer. But sometimes those things you could be developing or getting exposure to the thing that ends up translating it. And that could be in subject area. So you could go continue to volunteer and then get a full-time job in that, you know, social justice space. Or you could use those skills that you developed and bring them to something completely different, but you've developed the things in that other space. So I think that that's a really good point.
Great. So I see several more people have joined our live stream. So we're so thank you for joining. And I just want to remind you that feel free to ask a question either about the current topic, which is about trying to find your passion or not. Or if you just have a general career related question, we will try and answer it the best we can.
Is that a question that just popped up? Is that with that one down there?
Oh,
I think
that.
There might be. Here we go.
Oh, good question.
What if you don't have a passion? Well, we talked about this a little, but why don't we restate our case here?
Yeah, so I think that that's a great point, because sometimes it's overwhelming to think, what am I passionate about? I just kind of go through my day, I do my job, I watch Netflix. But I think if you evaluate when you feel like energized, sometimes it might be through taking an inventory. We have Myers-Briggs. There's the strong interest inventory. Sometimes it's your passion could be doing a thing, whether that's podcasting or I think that maybe bring down the expectation of passion, because passion by definition feels like it's the most important thing.
Right. Maybe I'm not passionate about finance as a whole, but I'm really passionate about working in Excel. Right. Those people exist. Those people exist. All right. We have another question here. Any tips on how to stick to following your passion when it feels like all of your friends are doing the same thing, particularly in finance, consulting, etc.? Well, that's a great question.
That is a great question. So wait, does it mean when you have a different passion or you have the same passion but everyone else is doing it too?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to self-evaluating where your values are more than anything. And sometimes your friends being interested in an area will help spark interest of your own that then you can relate that, okay, here's what I value most and here's what I've seen that I love about this new field that maybe I wasn't interested in before. I think there can be a lot of positives about that. I think when it starts to feel like you're just along for the ride and you never really were passionate about it at all, that's when you go back to think, okay, what is most important about this to me and in what different ways? Is it the function of what I'll be doing? Is it the actual nuts and bolts of I'm sitting down, I'm working in an Excel spreadsheet or doing X, Y, and Z? Is it that I love to be analytical? Is it that I love to work with data or whatever those smaller elements might be? And then think about are there other areas that that can also apply to?
I think we also see this often on our side when we have students who have been pre-med their whole lives. all through high school, they were very good at science. They have always thought that they would be a doctor. This was the path for them. And then for whatever reason, they either get exposed to something different here at Penn, or they learn that the road to being a doctor is maybe more arduous or costly than they expected, and they make a transition. So then it's kind of breaking apart what was the thing that was exciting to you about being a doctor. If it's helping people, there's lots of ways to do that. If it's still being involved in healthcare in a capacity, there's many other ways to stay involved in healthcare. If it's doing hard science, but maybe not in the patient-facing capacity, there's lots of ways to continue to do hard science. So I think that breaking down the pieces and thinking rather than like, oh, this is my path, what about that path was the appealing part for you?
I think you'll always start big. So I used to be a pre-med advisor, so I very commonly would ask people, why are you interested in healthcare or becoming a doctor? Whether it was for people who are switching that path or even continuing on in that path. And to Milan's point, the answer is always, I want to help people, which is also humongous and impossible to find. So I think as soon as you have that next thing, then you just have to keep asking yourself, okay, what does that mean? How do I want to help people? What's most important about helping people? Is it providing them healthcare? Is it being in that healthcare setting and helping them in that way?
Specific population.
Or is it, a specific population, people that I love to work with? Mm-hmm. Or is it that I just want to help people with their lives in general? Or could it go beyond that healthcare aspect of it?
All right, we've got another question. Yeah. What might you suggest to break into a field that you think that would interest you, but which you have no experience?
A great question.
One faced by nearly every student at some point.
Yeah, and everyone says, oh, I'm really interested in whatever, but I've never actually worked in that field.
How do I get that job? They need experience. I don't have the experience.
Because contrary to popular belief, our students don't come in as freshmen already being investment bankers.
Or not all.
Some do think that's the expectation, though, for sure.
So what is what?
So there's some good tools on our website. The digital career resources page and the online subscriptions include some really good exploratory tools. I always refer to the Vault Career Insider, which as a Penn student and alum, you have access to with your Penn key, username and password. That's one where you can just type in a title, like an editor. I think I like writing. I've always liked journalism. What does an editor mean if I haven't been the editor of my school paper? And you can see a whole overview of what the day-to-day is like, what the salary range is, what other titles it could entail or could be named, what the trajectory looks like if it's a growing or a shrinking field. And then like the really do your like introverted digging there. So just exploring like, is that something that seems appealing to me or not? But then of course I think that's lost without pairing it with conversations with people.
Yeah, and every job will have at the very least two distinct areas, right? You might have really specific content that is related to that position, but then you might also have a whole number of transferable skills that would be really valuable in that position. So then thinking about where can I gain those transferable skills if it's not directly within that industry, or it could be the opposite. It could be how can I work in this industry even if I'm not gaining those transferable skills, but I'll learn more about that industry. And then you'll start to gain those different elements in different ways to make yourself a better candidate.
Yeah, that would be my answer for sure, is that if I'm, you know, I've done the research and I know that I'm really interested in a particular field, but I've not had any experience, not internship or volunteering or anything, I would, you know, say, all right, but I know I have this skill set, you know, and maybe I was doing it in a different field or I was doing it in a club or even just something that I learned in a class. And then I'm going to structure my resume to highlight those specific things so I can be able to say, hey, you're looking for somebody with this set of skills, and I have this very particular set of skills.
Yeah, and more often than not, the set of skills is more important than actual industry experience, especially for undergrads who are just starting in a certain industry.
Right, because there's not an expectation that you will have had that experience yet, because you're a student.
And a lot of times where the idea of passion comes in is being able to express your true eagerness and interest in that area is really valuable. Even if you haven't necessarily worked in that area, but being able to say, I understand that these are skills that are very important to that, and I have these skills, and I'm also really interested in this field, and these are some things that I've done to test and show that interest.
Yeah, we had an employer visit just yesterday, and they were saying that along with the technical things you need to bring, if you're excited and enthusiastic about their organization, you know what they're about, what they do, and that's why you want to be in that space, that spark is something that they're really looking for. So you can get there by doing research, by reading articles, by just brushing up in that space and being convincing.
All right, we've got another great question. How do you tell effective stories about your experiences in interviews to demonstrate passion? I've heard people talk about using STAR. What is that? What is that?
STAR method.
STAR, I could talk about Star Wars.
That would be one thing you could do. I actually...
Not what we're going for?
When I first interviewed... Sure, that one. Go with that one. When I first interviewed at the hotel, actually, I had only been in career services in an administrative capacity. So I'm on this phone interview, and they said, can you answer in the STAR method? And I was like, hopefully, because I didn't know. So this is something that actually employers seek. So it's a tool that can help you prepare, but it's not something, it's something you might actually encounter in an actual interview. And I realized on the other side of it that it wasn't just like a framework. They actually, I was doing hiring on the other side for my team, and I had to submit to HR a grid that said that the person had answered the S, the T, the A, and the R.
So for our listeners and viewers who don't know, STAR is an acronym.
Exactly.
Natty, not a fan of acronyms.
We need to get rid of them
But
all.
Can you tell us what STAR stands for?
I'm bad at this for a few reasons. One, I'm bad at acronyms, as everyone
Why
knows.
Why you should abolish them?
Two, I don't think at the end of the day, I don't think you need to know what S, T, A, and R stand for once you get the idea and the principle of I am telling a story and I'm talking about a situation, which is the S, or I'm relating it to the, is the T a task?
It's task is sometimes defined as target. So this is the problem at hand, I usually say.
And then, or an action that was related to that task. So something like really specific or actionable that you actually did. And then also a result. So actually I do know it. A result in what was the outcome of that? You had this action and it led to whatever.
So I think the STAR method is especially helpful in phone interviews where you don't have the feedback of the other side. And obviously we're seeing more and more of those higher view asynchronous video interviews. So if you're trying to make sure that you hit on the important parts of your story, sometimes STAR method is abbreviated as CAR method, where the S and the T are context. I think that can be helpful too. You're basically just setting up the story, making sure that you clearly identify what the action was that you took so that the employer can see what your impact was. And then often I find that the students forget the result when I do mock interviews. So it's like, I'm telling this story, you must assume that it had a positive outcome, but really like I picture it as kind of tying a bow on the story and saying we were able to submit the paper on time, despite the fact that we're all super busy. It doesn't need to be, it was award-winning, but we accomplished the task.
And result is definitely the most common. I think, honestly, with my talk to students, people lack different areas of that a lot of different times. So just knowing what STAR stands for, sometimes you might say, oh, you know what? I forgot to actually set the stage for what this problem was, and I just dove straight into this was the research we were looking
at. Exactly.
So setting that stage for that person might have been the most important part, whereas they already had the action and the task really enveloped in what they were talking about. Result comes up the most because I think a lot of times people think, like, maybe research is a good example. Maybe they were working at a research lab, but there wasn't a super direct outcome. Like, they were working the whole summer, but there wasn't, weren't published in a journal, or their research wasn't tied up in any nice little bow. So I think a lot of times with the research, or with the result in that, you go to, what you did help overall? Like, what was it leading towards? Was there a broad area or broad problem that you were trying to solve? And what did this help achieve with that?
So often the case in an internship, especially, you may not have the resolution because you only worked on this little piece of it. So it's coming up with a resolution. It's coming up with a result that you, even if it was, this was something that they considered, or my supervisor said that it was a well thought out proposal and they're going to consider implementing it. That's fine as well.
No,
I think
yet.
That with STAR as well, and considering the stories that you tell, I think that's a really helpful place to start interview prep, and maybe considering your passion as well, because the stories that you tell likely will be able to flex and answer myriad questions, and not just all teamwork questions. They can also answer client-facing questions or problem-solving questions. So when you think about the stories that you're most eager to talk about to an employer, you realize you might be able to kind of make sure that that story gets integrated into your interview so that you're able to highlight the thing that you want to highlight.
Yeah, and like look at your own resume.
Yes.
Top to bottom, think about what of each item on there you are most proud of, when you felt the most either accomplished or productive in a certain role. And think about what those types of things were, because a lot of people's interview style is just they have the resume in front of them and they might just pick, tell me about that. And more often than not, sometimes people aren't prepared to do that because they think, oh, well, they're clearly going to go towards this area right here. And they end up going this whole total different direction.
Yeah, or you just end up reading the bullet points that are on your resume, which that's a tricky situation too, because you're like, well, I have it right there. I called out the important things, made this resume for you, look at my bullets. But if you're able to say, oh, actually, so the big thing I took away from the industry here or my work style was that. So exactly. Being introspective about the work that you've done is super helpful.
So this has been STAR Talk with Natty and me, Lynn.
Star Trek and Star Wars all covered.
So we have just a few more minutes before our broadcast ends. So, you know, to stay on our topic here, and again, we'd be happy to take one more question if one comes up. Oh, one has come up. For those listening, the comment was made, that all makes sense. I don't think I'm a very good storyteller, so I need to practice. Well, you can certainly come and practice if you're a Penn student here in Career Services. We offer mock interviews, and you can even have that videotaped if you need to see that done. Interview Stream is a great resource that we offer where you can do a practice interview and review it yourself. So we have all sorts of interview practice. So
I think more often than not, too, people end up being way too over-formalized or feel like they need to make things too formalized. So a great way to practice is also just talk to your family about something that you did. If you call your family every weekend or something like that to check in, say, oh, I have this thing coming up and I'm talking to so-and-so at whatever company and I'm really excited to tell them about. And do a sample of one of the things you wanted to talk about.
True. And that tell me about yourself, I think, is sometimes the most difficult. So getting practice with that to friends, family.
So I think we'll start to wrap things up here. But since we've been talking about this for the last half an hour, so, you know, do we want to each talk about something that...
Passionate about.
Or here, you know, in the work that we do, even if your passion is not career services, which it is, because our boss is watching. But, you know, just something that you love doing as part of your job or outside of the office that work has helped you.
I love talking to students. Really invigorates, I think, all of the work that we do, because it really, one, puts a face to all the things that you're sitting here thinking about and how can you help people. But when you're actually able to talk and sit down to someone, it really personalizes it. And because everybody's story is so unique, it makes it so much more fun than what are all these ways that we can help, when it's like, oh, I can really help this person right in front of me.
I should have gone first because that thing.
That's why I went first.
No, but I did a Clifton Strengths, whatever they rename it all the time, the Clifton Strengths workshop the other day, and looking at a team breakdown and seeing that, like, the relationship building among career advisors is always very high. But I agree. So there's sometimes when I'll have a pretty open day. It looks like I have a lot of administrative time because the student no-showed or canceled, or I've just billed myself administrative time. And I think, oh, this is great. I'm going to have accomplished so much today, get so many things off my to-do list. And at the end of the day, I'm, like, low. Like, this, there wasn't a lot going on today. It's definitely the talking to students, and Penn students and alumni are incredible. They accomplish so much. And I think, maybe to be more specific to Nadia's point, being able to show to a student who comes in thinking, the employers are asking for so much, I'm really not going to be able to bring much to them, my friends are doing all this more impressive things, to be able to kind of remind them about all of the incredible things that they're doing and how they can leverage those things to get to the outcome that they want, whether that's an internship, a job, or just clarity on their own passion.
And for me, it's something like this, you know, engaging with an audience is something that I'm very passionate about. So getting to talk to people live online is incredible. Getting to talk with Milin every week on the podcast and having our special guests on. And I also like being a creative problem solver. So one of my roles here in the office is to come up with technological solutions to problems. But even something like this, we're just trying to get our messaging out in a new way. And to just be able to sit here in the library and be able to talk to the world, that's super exciting. And so I'm very passionate about CS Radio and reaching out to an audience. With that brings us to the end of our fourth year of doing CS Radio.
We're waving to everyone.
Waving
to
everybody. Thank you so much for coming. We're going to be doing a lot more live streaming in the coming school year, the 19-20 school year, both on Instagram and on other platforms. We're going to be doing some more of our programs live, some more live chats like this. So we hope that next year you will join us for more events like this, and you'll join us for another year of podcasting, our fifth year as we approach 100 episodes.
I guess like 2-3 years.
I know. It really is amazing. We've been doing it for so long.
Any fanfare for the 100th that we've planned?
TBD.
We've got some ideas cooking, but it'll be big.
And of course, a shout out.
Shout out to our producer, Karen, keeping us sound and sharp. And thanks to you for joining us. And we'll see you next time on CS Radio. Bye-bye. This podcast is produced by the University of Pennsylvania Career Services Office, a division of the Vice Provost for University Life. Your hosts are Amy Lynn Kirshner, J. Michael DeAngelis, and Ann Thomas Leach. It's produced, mixed, and edited by Karen Yang. Thank you for another great year, and we'll see you for season 5 of CS Radio.